We do not have a quorum officially, but we'd like to begin in the interest of time. In case there is someone here who is looking for the State Government Finance Committee, they're in the basement.
We're more interested.
I guess they all want to stay here. That's good. We welcome you to our committee meeting this morning, and especially President Runix from the university, and good to see you at the table.
Be here.
And we're anxious to hear about the university's initiatives this morning.
Very good. Chair Noller, members of the committee, it's a great pleasure for me to be back here with you. I guess, what is it, close to 3 weeks before adjournment? And to talk about the future of the University of Minnesota, I'd like to take just a moment to introduce three of our regents who are attending the hearing today. Regent David Metzen, Chair of the University's Board of Regents, is with us. Regent Patricia Simmons and Regent Dallas Bonsack. And I'm also joined by people from the University of Minnesota, academic leaders in the University Faculty Senate, and also deans and other staff members of the university. Senior Vice President Robert Jones is with me this morning, and he may also address some of your questions in a few moments. My understanding is you would like me to talk briefly about the university's approach to the future, our strategic plan and positioning process, and I'd like to spend just a few moments. I'll try to get through this maybe in 15 minutes or so, and then give us ample time to explore a range of questions.
President Runix?
Yes.
I'd like to officially call the meeting to order. Now we have a quorum. So.
Okay, good. Thank you.
May continue.
Thank you. One of my favorite quotes is from John Galsworthy, the British author, and it goes something like this: if you don't think about the future, you can't have one. And for us, the strategic plan and positioning process that I'm going to talk to you about is all about thinking creatively, thoughtfully about the university's future, the role of the university in the state of Minnesota, and what we think is necessary to keep Minnesota's only public research university viable and strong, academically productive, and a strong contributor to Minnesota's economy and quality of life. I just hit a button here and it sent my seat down. It's a bad omen.
I just made my adjustment.
I think I
don't hit the one.
I think I recognize Chair Metzen's comment. His favorite expression when he introduces me at public gatherings is, "This is the president of the University of Minnesota. I'm with him, win or tie." So I'm hoping for a good morning here. I just want to remind members of the committee a little bit about why the university is such an important asset to the state of Minnesota, because I think it provides a rich context for the ideas we're exploring in trying to position the university effectively for the future. I made the comment that the University of Minnesota is Minnesota's only public research and land-grant university. There are many states around the country that have two or more such universities. The California system might have at least a half a dozen major research universities. Michigan has two. But the University of Minnesota is your primary research university to solve serious issues in human health, dealing with serious problems in agriculture and food production. For example, wheat fungus, soybean rust and fungus, a wide range of issues that are really important to our economy and quality of life. 98% of all the externally funded research done in higher education in Minnesota is done at the University of Minnesota campuses. That's over $525 million this year, creating over 20,000 jobs in Minnesota's private economy. I would argue that the University of Minnesota has the highest rate of return for Minnesota of any of the investments you make as a part of the nearly $30 billion state budget. Recently, our Institute of Technology studied the alumni of the University of Minnesota who have graduated with degrees from that college. And those alumni have started 4,000 businesses around the world, 2,600 of them in Minnesota alone, with annual revenues close to $50 billion, employing nearly 200,000 employees. So this is a place that produces patents, spins off companies like Medtronic, and is a critical part of the medical device industry. It's keenly linked to Minnesota's business economy, its agricultural production, its forest products resource companies, and it's one of the reasons this university is regarded as one of the top universities in the United States, and in recent studies somewhere between third and seventh in terms of its overall productivity and impact. There's a lot of discussion today about access and opportunity to higher education. You should know that the University of Minnesota's Twin Cities campus, the main focus of our discussion today, is the second largest campus in the entire United States, only exceeded by the Ohio State University, and they have approximately 150 students more than the University of Minnesota. So anyway, it is a significant force in Minnesota, and I think these facts, this background, makes the focus on change, the focus on reform, the focus on the university's future vitally important to address at this time. There are many, many issues in our context, in the context of higher education, the environment of higher education, that make this a very timely and important effort at the University of Minnesota. We are becoming increasingly older and more diverse as a society. And some of the models we have used in education, I think, need to be thought about more creatively as we address the demographic changes in our society. We are increasingly in a globally competitive environment in higher education. People recruit some of our best scholars and even our best students to universities in Europe and China and many other parts of the world. We obviously, as I don't need to tell the committee, are in a period of some fiscal challenge, and that is having, I think, a more dramatic impact on education than many other sectors of the state budget. We at one time were a state that provided much higher levels of funding to the University of Minnesota. We were about 8.3% of your budget about 25 years ago, and now are under 4%. And so we know we're in a period of some people have characterized as a permanent fiscal challenge or crisis, and that too is something we have to think about. We at the University of Minnesota believe that we're not going to really strengthen the university in the long haul if we just admire these issues, admire these trends. We need to do something about them, and we need to try to better manage our future and manage the priorities of the university. So this strategic planning effort, the strategic positioning effort, is all about trying to strengthen the university for the long haul. It's all about trying to consider very thoughtfully and carefully the role of the University of Minnesota in Minnesota's system of higher education. What are our unique responsibilities as we go forward, and how can we more effectively collaborate with public and other public and private institutions in our state? This effort has been going for more than a year. It's the first time in more than 10 years that the university has stepped back and thought in this way about its future. It started with a retreat of the Board of Regents in July, and every meeting of the Board from the period of July until the present has been devoted to this particular issue. We've had at least 1.5 to 2 hour work sessions in every Board meeting addressing all facets of the strategic plan and positioning process, and I could go on and on about the extensive discussions on the university campus, university-wide and community forums. Literally thousands of people have participated in one way or another in these conversations. Now, what I'm really here to talk about are some reports that I received as a part of this process. The Board affirmed unanimously the directions of the strategic plan in its March meeting, and then later in March, I received two reports from working groups that I had appointed as a part of this process. One of the working groups is addressing academic priorities for the University of Minnesota as we address an ever more challenging future. The second group is dealing with administrative service and business issues that have to do with how we manage the university and how we plan to manage our future. These reports produced approximately 40 recommendations very broad and sweeping recommendations for the university future. You've probably read about three or four of them in the newspaper, but I want to tell you the other 35 to 37 are equally important when it comes to thinking about our strategic position in higher education and what we need to do to make it stronger as we go forward. The reports cover a wide range of issues. Some of the recommendations talk about realigning colleges and academic departments. They would reduce the total number of colleges on the Twin Cities campus of the University of Minnesota, creating strengthened centers of leadership, more collaboration between and among fields that really have a reason and a purpose to work more effectively together. These recommendations would, if fully implemented, and I expect and I'm committed to make to ensuring that they do get implemented, would literally transform the kind of academic support, advisement, academic services, career services for students on the University of Minnesota campus. We really have a strong commitment in these reports to make sure that students who attend the campuses of the University of Minnesota succeed. And that's a recurring theme that I will come back to in my comments. The reports affirm the university's very strong and continuing commitment to not only access, but also access to people from low-income and culturally diverse backgrounds. There's a deep and abiding commitment for the university to maintain its commitment to diversity in all forms and aspects, and there are some exciting ideas and recommendations on the table to achieve those values and aspirations. The recommendations that talk about strengthening the faculty and support to the faculty, recommendations that clearly talk about reducing operating costs and reallocating resources to other parts of the university's budget, other academic and service priorities. When I was before the committee some time ago, I presented the university's biennial budget, and if you'll recall that presentation, in the middle of that presentation, which was a partnership proposal to the state of Minnesota, we committed the University of Minnesota to reallocate $45 million over the next 2 years to cover rising costs and academic investments, urgent academic investments of the University of Minnesota, and that assumed full funding of the university's $126 million request. If it falls short of that, we have to raise tuition more, we have to do other things, obviously. I hope we don't have to cut budgets anymore, particularly after what we've been through in the last couple of years. But anyway, there are real cost savings in these recommendations to really cover the rising costs of the university and also to make critically important investments. Now, what are these recommendations for change? And I can't get into all 40 of them. You don't have the time, but let me at least hit some of the ones that I think have hit, that at least have surfaced on your radar screens and produce some emails for you. The recommendations would essentially integrate a number of colleges to form larger academic units and stronger centers of academic leadership. First of all, for the College of Human Ecology, a college that has four different academic departments, one of these departments called Design, Housing, and Apparel, would join the College of the current College of Architecture and Landscape Architecture and create a new College of Design, a center of leadership on the design sciences at the University of Minnesota. It would expand curriculum, expand research opportunities in this vitally important area at the university, would create new degree options for students, so we think it's a very, very exciting idea. Two other departments, Family Social Science and the School of Social Work, would be integrated with academic units of the current College of Education and Human Development. These are all very highly regarded units, the three that I've just mentioned. And this particular college, with the integration of these two additional units, would be a college really well positioned to address issues of learning and human development throughout the entire lifespan. Instead of having resources in three or four different colleges that address these issues, we bring them together in one college with a great deal of academic strength. These integrations would reduce operating costs, but the real reasons for doing them, and not to save a little bit of money, but the real reasons go to the heart of strengthening our leadership capacity in these critically important areas. I should mention that I've identified these in my role as president as long-term academic priorities for the University of Minnesota. Another set of colleges would, another set of changes would involve the current Colleges of Natural Resources and the College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Science. The academic units would come together and form a strengthened college addressing issues of food systems, in environmental science and policy, and renewable resources. You might be interested to know that there are very, very strong academic faculty in these colleges devoted to issues of the environment and renewable resources, about 45 faculty in the College of Natural Resources, about 60 devoted to the same issues in the College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Sciences. We bring these together, we can actually put the University of Minnesota on the worldwide map and really strengthen our resources for the future. I might also add that these colleges operate a number of statewide research stations that I think could be greatly strengthened by having common management and common leadership. The issue that's getting the most attention in the newspaper and probably has generated some mail for you involves the General College of the University of Minnesota, a college that has been a part of the university for about 70 years. General College was first started, as many of you know, as a port of entry to prepare students for academic work at the University of Minnesota. It was formed 70 years ago when Minnesota had no junior or community colleges or no system whatsoever. This proposal would not, as some of the rhetoric has indicated, eliminate the core functions and responsibilities of this college. It would transform those responsibilities into an academic department. It's a rather small college of 33 to 35 faculty members at the present time. It would become an academic department dedicated to developmental education and academic support for students who have academic needs at the University of Minnesota, and would perform strong leadership responsibilities with respect to Minnesota's other systems of higher education. I should point out that there are at least 25 departments that have faculty complements as large or larger than that of General College. You do not need a college to educate a student at the University of Minnesota. If that was true, we'd have $70 million more in overhead at the University of Minnesota, and we'd have about 60 colleges. So this is all about addressing serious issues of academic support. It's about enhancing academic support for students who do need help and assistance. And the proposal, besides creating an academic department in the newly formed College of Education and Human Development, would also involve the admission of students to degree-granting colleges. So if students attending the University of Minnesota need academic support, they're going to go into degree-granting colleges about 3 years from now, and they'll get the academic support they need from the Department of Developmental Studies or Developmental Education and other university-wide resources. There are also additional recommendations in this report that address preparation issues in pre-K-12 education, recommendations that talk about improving access and diversity at the University of Minnesota. Now, why is this really important? I have a history that many of you don't know of more than 40 years of thinking about and addressing these issues in our society. I'm an educational psychologist, and my area of specialization is the developmental learning needs of children and adults. I have come to the reluctant conclusion that this is the wrong way for the university to support students who have academic needs at the University of Minnesota. The current four-year graduation rate in General College is about 7.7%. That is, as of last year, the six-year rate is about 30%. I think that's far too low. That means that you have about a 1 in 3 probability of graduating in 6 years if you enter this particular portal. And one of the big problems is that the students aren't successfully, at least successfully enough, transitioning to regular degree programs and regular colleges within the University of Minnesota. So this is all about admitting them into those cultures from the freshman year on, which we believe is going to substantially increase their outcomes. Now, the question, obviously, is what will happen to the diversity of the student population at the University of Minnesota, and I can commit to you that the university will be steadfast in its commitment to recruiting students from low-income and culturally diverse backgrounds into successful academic careers at the University of Minnesota. But this is all about improving undergraduate education, improving student outcomes. It's all about access to success. Getting in the door is not good enough. Getting in the door and out with a degree is what I think should represent the ideals and the commitment of the University of Minnesota. Now, people say, you know, are we going to deny admission to literally thousands of students at the University of Minnesota? And I think one of the things that people do not realize about the university's Twin Cities campus today is that this year, in this particular academic year, we will receive nearly 21,000 applications for freshman admission. And approximately 5,300 students will show up as freshmen in the fall and participate in freshman convocation. So we are already making these decisions. And I want to make just a couple of other quick comments. I think when you have that kind of a ratio, you have an obligation to make sure that when you admit students, they have a real strong probability of succeeding. But we do want to keep the University of Minnesota open to students from all walks of life. First-generation college students like myself, people from low-income backgrounds like myself, people from diverse cultural backgrounds, that should be what the university, among other things, commits itself to in the future. So I should tell you a little bit about the profile of the University of Minnesota. Currently, when it comes to serving students from diverse cultural backgrounds, students of color, the University of Minnesota's Twin Cities campus admits nearly double the number of such students that are represented as high school graduates in Minnesota's population. In fact, when it comes to what we call AAU research institutions like Wisconsin, Michigan, Iowa, institutions like that, the University of Minnesota is ranked fifth among 34 institutions with respect to the diversity of its undergraduate population when you factor into or you take into account the diversity of the state's population in the calculations. So we will continue to deepen our commitment to academic success, our commitment to recruiting and supporting a very diverse population of students on campus. We're going to provide better financial support. We're going to work with K-12 system to do what we can, along with our colleagues in that system and other parts of higher education, to improve preparation standards and preparation for post-secondary careers. And we're going to make some very transformative changes at the University of Minnesota. I should say that, in my judgment, if one looks at the evidence in higher education, there are three or four issues that determine whether students are successful. One is obviously ability and preparation. They have to be prepared to study and succeed at a place like St. Olaf or St. Cloud or the University of Minnesota. Secondly, they have to have the financial wherewithal to succeed. Thirdly, they have to be motivated. And fourthly, we have to do our job. We have to provide the kind of education and support that students need. I announced this fall some very ambitious and sweeping financial supports for low-income students who will access the University of Minnesota, all of its campuses. I announced something called the Founders Opportunity Scholarship. This scholarship will provide essentially a free ride tuition and free fee scholarship to low-income students who meet the federal Pell eligibility requirements. Their annual incomes are approximately annual family incomes are approximately $26,000 a year. We will also expand other kinds of scholarship opportunities. For example, I played a strong role in developing something with Representative Mariana Rosa some time ago. It's called the Minnesota Minority Encouragement Program. We now have 100 students from the St. Paul schools in this program that were provided financial support and received a lot of support on their way to a successful career at the University of Minnesota. You know about the Wallen Scholars Program. There are 400 students from in the Wallen Scholars Program now on the Twin Cities campus alone. We're going to work with our colleagues in Minsky. We have a great two-year college system. It was good enough for my youngest son when he started after high school. Nephews that have thrived in this system. We're going to increase the transfer of students from this system and increase levels of support during their two-year college career and their successful transition to the University of Minnesota. There's something called the Minnesota Cooperative Admissions Program, in which students who apply to the Twin Cities campus are guaranteed admission. If we don't have space for them, they're guaranteed admission to the University of Minnesota if they successfully complete the negotiated transfer curriculum and achieve at acceptable academic levels. And these students who are in the MCAP program or transfer from the community college system have graduation rates and success rates at the university's Twin Cities campus that mirror those of students who start as freshmen at the University of Minnesota. This is just a little bit of what we're talking about with respect to the strategic planning and positioning effort at the University of Minnesota. To us, it's all about making wise choices with precious resources that we have at the present time, making investments in areas that we think are critically important to the state's future and to the future of the University of Minnesota, being prudent and wise about the role of the University of Minnesota within Minnesota's system of higher education. We need to complement other parts of our system, not duplicate them. And it's all about strategically positioning the university, seizing opportunities that are really important to our state, lowering our operating costs, and making the investments that we think are really important to Minnesota's future. I'd like to invite two of my colleagues, Professor Martin and Professor Kane, just for a couple of minutes to share with you the debate that recently occurred in the University Senate, a very broadly based body, deliberative body at the University of Minnesota. And I'd like to ask them to share at least the essence of that discussion and share a recent resolution, if I could do that at this time.
You sure can.
Mr. Chairman, while they're coming forward, just a question about the process. Some of us have some interest in the general college question, but I see on the agenda here it says this meeting will cover the university's initiatives, which we've just heard something about, and there will be a second meeting to discuss the general college. So is your intent then that we withhold questions about the general college meeting, or I just want to follow whatever your script is, but I do have some questions that I'm interested in relative to the general college.
Representative Nelson, I don't have a script.
In terms of your agenda.
Yeah, I this is an opportunity to talk to the president of the university about all subjects relating to this initiative, including the general college. So if you have questions along
those will be appropriate rather than waiting.
That is correct. Okay. And we will have one more meeting, and the focus will be entirely on that portion of this.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, and
thank
please
you.
Identify yourself.
Chair Nornes and committee members, I'm Judith Martin. I'm a professor in the College of Liberal Arts at the university, and I'm also the vice chair of the university senate. The chair is over there, the president. Last Thursday, we had a special meeting of the University of Minnesota Senate to talk about the strategic planning process and to talk about the activities that the faculty and staff and students have been involved in. At that meeting, we overwhelmingly passed a resolution in support of the strategic planning initiative. In fact, 98% of the Senate, and the Senate is composed of faculty and students, 98% of the Senate voted in favor of the strategic planning initiative resolution that we put forward. Just to give you a little background, the Senate is an elected body. Both faculty and Senate and students are elected. We represent all campuses of the University of Minnesota. We advise the president, and we are also a venue for debating and discussing critical issues facing the university. And as you can imagine, the strategic planning initiative is an initiative that we wanted to debate. The resolution of support that was passed by the Senate was passed for several reasons, not the least of which is because the Senate strongly endorses the goal of systematically reviewing and improving the university, not just for the university community, but for the state of Minnesota. And Professor Kane is going to outline some of the consultation that was gone, that was taken up by the University Senate in the about 6 weeks that we had between the time that the provost recommendations came out and our meeting last week.
Chair Norris and members of the committee, thank you for letting us speak with you this morning. As Professor Martin mentioned, I'm a faculty member in the College of Education and Human Development, and I'm also the vice chair of the Faculty Consultative Committee. As Judith mentioned, there were several reasons why we overwhelmingly passed a resolution of support.
For just a moment, can you identify, tell us your name, please?
I'm sorry, I'm Professor Kane, Mary Jo Kane, K-A-N-E. So I just want to highlight just a couple of, a few reasons why we supported overwhelmingly in favor of the strategic planning initiative. First was because of the extensive process of consultation that occurred to produce the resolution. Faculty leaders hosted a number of forums as a way to gather broad input. These forums took place on the East and West Bank campuses, the St. Paul and Morris campus, and we also had hookups with Duluth and Crookston. In addition, since last July, faculty leaders have met with the president and the provost Sullivan on a regular basis to give them our views, as well as listen to theirs, about strategic planning. I can assure members of this committee that the depth and the breadth of such a consultation process made many of us feel a sense of ownership in this historic initiative. A second reason we voted in favor of the strategic planning initiative is because at the heart of recommendations for transforming the university is, as President Brunings, I think, has so eloquently stated here this morning, is an unwavering commitment to access and diversity, and because of the administration's acknowledgement and celebration of the university's historic role as a land-grant institution. A third reason we endorse strategic planning is because we recognize, and in my personal view, I think this is probably the most important reason, is that we recognize that it is critically important that we stand together as a community, even in respectful and honorable disagreement. When we stand together with a common purpose, we can most effectively renew our connections with the people of the state of Minnesota as we fulfill our mission of teaching, research, and community engagement. Finally, we strongly endorsed strategic planning because we believe in the vision and leadership of President Brunings. Whenever an organization goes through a process of significant change, it is faced with numerous challenges, but it is also presented with unique opportunities. In my view, no one understands that better than President Brunings. I say in my view because I have some personal knowledge and experience with President Brunings. For 15 years, I have been a faculty member in the College of Education and Human Development, the college where he served as a dean. And for the last few years, I have been a member of the University Senate. In both of these capacities, I have worked closely with him and have seen firsthand how he puts into practice many of the commitments and goals that are central to the strategic planning process and are also, I believe, keys to success as we all move forward together to reshape and reimagine the U. Thank you very much.
Thank you. President Brunings, any other...
Chair Norris, I'm really pleased to answer your question. I'm going to ask Senior Vice President Robert Jones to join me. And he has system-wide responsibilities that address many of the questions I think that will come up as a part of our discussion here today. And anyway, we're open to your questions on any range of topics.
All right, thank you. Members, Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, while I have both of you here, because I've asked the same question of both of you at various times. So, one last time, for the record, could you tell me where the Rochester University proposal is in the new initiative, strategic initiative of the University of
Minnesota? Representative Pulaski, I've learned from some of my moles that Senior Vice President Jones and I get it right. We've given you the same answer in separate occasions without having us both present, which is a rare thing at the University of Minnesota, I might say.
Mr. Chair, President Brunings, but it's greatly appreciated.
Yeah, I think it was, although I'm haunted by Emerson's famous line that consistency is the hobgoblin of small minds, but that doesn't apply to Senior Vice President Jones in particular. But let me just say that the focus of the strategic plan did engage Rochester. Rochester, our role and responsibilities with others in Rochester is certainly addressed in the plan itself. But these recommendations of the working groups were not focused on Rochester per se, and so that's why I didn't make any mention of them. But you know, we do think we have a responsibility not just for educational programs at Rochester. Right now, the most exciting conversations involve collaborations with Mayo, IBM, mostly we're linking computer science, mathematics, biology, and the Academic Health Center. So we see a role in Rochester. Exactly how that will unfold over the next few years, I think hardly any of us know at the present time, but we're committed to working with our colleagues in MinSCU, Mayo Clinic, and the thriving business interests of that area to see what makes sense in the future.
Chair.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, President Bruning, if Rochester has proposed to the university programs where there have been a demonstrated need, either a core group of individuals that would take the program,
mm-hmm.
or businesses, whether they be medical or technology, that would support a core group of individuals that would take the program, it's the university's position that within the resources given to you, you would offer that program in Rochester.
That's right.
So, Mr. Chair and President Brunix, why is it then that we have in the higher education omnibus bill yet another study of the lack of offering such programs in Rochester?
President Brunix.
Chair Norris, Representative Pulaski, I'm not sure I can really answer that question. It's not a part of the university's proposed budget, and it's certainly not a proposal that we put on the table.
Mr. Chair, I just want to finish with this. You know, principal-centered leadership is a rare thing, and when we see it, we do like to relish it when it's demonstrated. So thank you for doing
that. Thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my colleague, Representative Pulaski, is nothing if not consistent, so...
I've got to go back now and check the transcript to see if Robert and I are consistent.
Well, especially now that you're on the record here. So. Yeah. And I think they probably communicate by cell phone, Representative Pulaski. Improving overall student outcomes is something I think we all share, but one of the things that concerns me is that no one graduates from the general college. They move on to the other colleges. And so it seems that one of the begging questions here is what's happening, or better, perhaps better asked, what's not happening at the other colleges in terms of being successful with general college entrance, but also I think just kind of with other students in general. It seems to me that some of the colleges are challenged just overall, and I know that the university over the years has struggled with trying to get up its graduation rates. I think, I don't know, a year ago or two, or at least periodically we hear, you know, how the university ranks, you know, in regards to, or vis-a-vis the other Big Ten schools. And sometimes those reports have come back to us in Minnesota as, kind of embarrassing, or you know, for some cause for concern. And so I can see strategically where the university would want to sort of try to tie all this together, that the challenge in many ways isn't just being more successful with general college students entrance, although that's certainly one, but that it's important for the university just to be successful, more successful period with all its undergrad students. It seems to me this is going to be really tough work, that I think if the public if the public's belief is that by changing and restructuring of the nature of the general college and making it a department, that somehow that pretty quickly is going to result in better undergrad graduation performance at the University of Minnesota, I think we may be setting up the public for an expectation that should be met, but is not going to be easy to meet. And so my question is, and Dr. Jones and I had a good visit yesterday and we went over some of these issues. My question is, what is it about the existing undergrad colleges that would lead us to believe that they're going to be successful, increasingly successful, with GC students or students with that profile, and all undergrad students? What do we need to do? What do we need to do dramatically in order to turn that boat around in terms of each one of these colleges? And my hope is that part of your answer is that we need to do a heck of a lot and not just simply, shut down the GC and turn it into a department, and then CLA and IT and the others are just going to go out there and do a great job, because I don't think they're doing a good job currently right now.
I'm not sure who's a directed.
I'll start, and then
okay. President Brunick.
Chair Narnes, Representative Mariana Rosa. Let me just put it this way. First of all, the student progress and graduation rates on the Twin Cities campus have increased and improved dramatically over the last several years through a number of strategies that we think will continue to produce better results for students. And so we think the trajectory is definitely moving in the right direction. Secondly, this isn't a report that says that all of these things will be fixed by transforming General College into a department. There's a very strong and coherent set of ideas to literally transform a lot of things on the campus to, I think, improve student progress and graduation results. Students do need to be better prepared to enter the University of Minnesota. You should know that two-thirds of the students who apply or who enter General College do not apply initially listing General College as their first preference. It's often considered by about two-thirds of the students to be a fallback position. So they don't seek to go to General College. They seek to come into the University of Minnesota. After 2 years, about 60% of the students successfully transition out of General College and the rest of the university. Our feeling, and I think there's a lot of evidence to back this up, is that students will more successfully make those degree transitions if they start in the culture of those colleges and get very, very strong academic support. Thirdly, General College and its colleagues, along with a much strengthened academic support system throughout the entire University of Minnesota, will participate in providing support for students who have academic needs. At the present time, a lot of this service is in several different places, and we think it needs to be brought together, deepened, and strengthened in a much more focused way than I think is the case at the present time. And then I think we need a cultural transformation across the University of Minnesota. This has to be raised to a much higher level of consciousness and commitment for all the colleges of the University of Minnesota. And so every college is going to be benchmarked on these issues. We're going to be looking at its diversity profile, its student progress profile. Our executives will be evaluated not just for their promotion of research and graduate education, but we're going to look at how well these colleges are doing with respect to student results as well. So there are probably a half a dozen or more very substantive systemic strategies that we plan to put in place to maintain access, improve student progress, and improve student outcomes. And when people talk about access and the lack of access for a change like this, I would point out that if the university can increase its student progress and graduation rates by 20%, it increases its access by 20%, because we have no intention of lowering our enrollment. So if students do get better at the university, have better outcomes, we can serve them more effectively, we can serve them at lower cost, and we can actually serve more students. And that's a lot of what we're trying to do here. Better access to success. We want our students to be highly successful. They are now, but it does vary across colleges of the University of Minnesota.
Dr. Jones?
Did you have a response as well?
No, just briefly, I think it's important. Robert Jones, Senior Vice President, University of Minnesota. Mr. Chair, Representative Mariana, as you stated, we talked about this a bit yesterday, but I think it's important to emphasize that one of the reasons that we are making this proposal to transform the General College into an academic department and create a situation where students can benefit, continue to benefit from the nurturing environment that that unit provides to underrepresented students and students that are underprepared to be successful in higher ed. We want to continue to nurture that and provide that opportunity, but at the same time, research tells us and the observations and observing our peer institutions that have a much higher success rate with dealing with underprepared students than we currently have tells us that we need to look at a different model. And that model is to keep in place the developmental education provided by the General College faculty while marrying that with a process where students are also directly admitted into the collegiate unit where they plan to major so that they can become part of that collegiate unit culture as well, because that's one of the important success variables that we don't have in place now. The question that you raised earlier about the handoff, once the student has amassed possibly 4 or 3 credits in GC, the handoff to the undergraduate degree-granting college has not been as smooth as it should be because of this sense of separateness from the General College and the rest of the undergraduate degree-granting institutions. And clearly, undergraduate degree-granting colleges, and clearly part of the plan here is to change that situation so that the students are immersed not only in the culture of the that's provided by General College, but also the culture of the broader collegiate unit. And this, from our perspective, will tremendously add to the success rate, the educational attainment of these students, because the transition will be smoother for students.
Representative Marianne.
And Mr. Chair, and I'm encouraged by some of the things I'm hearing, because I think that that if this is simply a scenario of handing off students to the degree grading colleges, then my point is that the when you look at just the record of those colleges, there are challenges there. And it seems to me that in order to be successful, there's going to have to be dramatic change that needs to happen inside of each one of those colleges. And I've been around long enough to know that any institution, it's not just the University of Minnesota, but any institution that tries to do culture change, if you will, in terms in terms of the culture of the institution, the energy that goes into a new set of goals, et cetera, it's really difficult to do. It's really difficult work. I mean, I think that's one of the big debates we have in K-12 education, sure. Frankly. And so you're biting off a real big, and I'm glad you are, but it's a real big agenda, and it's going to be real, I think, important as you move forward with your engagement with stakeholders, including the practitioners at the General College, that there be a quick movement toward a unified effort here, because I think it's going to take nothing short of that in terms of being able to have a vision that's strong enough and compelling enough to get folks who have been doing something in each of our colleges the same way for, you know, last 10, 20 years of their tenure there. So I'm not telling you anything you don't know. And President Brunings, I admire your willingness to bite off on him. I mean, we could have just pretty easily sat back, I think, and just, although that's not your style.
No.
But this, I mean, this is major. This is going to require major change of attitudes and procedures in the different colleges. I want to shift over to the admissions.
I wonder if I could just make a really quick transition comment. Chair Narnes, I didn't mention that every one of these recommendations regarding this restructuring of colleges will be implemented at over a 12 to 24-month period. And it will involve the people in the affected units, It will involve donors and alumni of the University of Minnesota, significant organizations that we need to engage in this process. In the case of General College, there will be no change in the next academic year with respect to the admission of students. They will be admitted in the same way. In the next year, they will be jointly admitted to degree-granting colleges and General College. So there will be at least a two, and there may be even 1 year beyond that, where we use the joint admission strategy so that we can get it right and do it right. And we plan to engage people in the General College community as well as other people across the university in this change process.
Mr. Chair, on the admissions issue, and I concur with your earlier statement that getting in isn't good enough. I mean, the ultimate goal is to have to produce highly skilled individuals with degrees that they can parlay into success for themselves and for all of us. But you still got to get in, and and Dr. Jones and I spoke about this yesterday. One of the areas where it seems to me almost your first kind of challenge will be this whole issue of the dual admission process. My understanding is that the way it traditionally works, that you know, the key admission decisions are made really pretty much at the top of each college's decision makers, and that departments themselves have, and if I'm wrong, I'll stand to be corrected, but departments themselves are not that intimately involved in the admission process at the critical point. It's really up to the department, or rather the college heads. And so just looking at it from a distance, it seems to me that we've got a bit of a mismatch, if you will. If you take, say, the Carleton School of Management, and I don't want to beat up on your colleges, President Brunings, but, you know, I looked at some of the enrollment statistics in some of the colleges, and quite frankly, the Carleton School of Management is pretty poor when it comes to diversity. Students of color and their skills, and I'm hard pressed to think that there aren't good numbers of motivated students of color that would like to pursue a management or a degree at that school. And again, I'm not trying to, you know, I don't want to insult your colleges, but you know, I'm looking at the numbers and I'm seeing real big challenges. And so I'm thinking about a table where you've got the heads of the Carleton School of Management making a decision about admissions, and then you've got the department what was the college, General College, at that same table trying to influence that decision according to their past practices and values about around diversity. And I see either a big battle, or I see perhaps one trumping the other. And so I guess I need to hear more about what kind of directives you and others will be providing to those existing colleges as they attempt to do something that, to some degree, depending on the college, they haven't done before, which is to take a good risk and chance with students that they haven't done so in the past. So we can speak more about, you know, what you intend to do as the leader of this institution in terms of holding those colleges accountable for expanding the base of opportunity and diversity, specifically in regards to the admissions procedures.
President Bruno, Chair Norris, Representative Mariana Rosa, I think what we need to take into account is how well it's working now, and it's not working. So there are very few students who transition out of General College today into the Carlson School of Management. But there are students who transition from community colleges into the Carlson School of Management every year and succeed. So we do have a disconnect right now, and it's not working. It's not successful. And I think we just need to step back and be honest and recognize that it doesn't mean that the people are bad and they're not doing a good job. It just means that the model and the culture are really not getting us the kind of results we need, even though I think those results have and the performance has improved quite dramatically over the last few years. I think it's all about the culture of the University of Minnesota. We're going to make this a priority, and we're going to make the support for the students who enter the University of Minnesota much more of a priority. And we have done that for years, and we're going to continue to do it. But I don't think that puts what is now General College as a disadvantage. If it's a university-wide priority to recruit and provide good academic support for students who come from diverse backgrounds, that will continue. And I think that we have a much better chance of being successful if they're... Yeah, we actually have models like this. When I was a provost, I suggested to General College that we do joint admission in some programs, and those programs are producing, in selected cases, higher retention and graduation rates. And so I think we have experimented with these models. They do work much more effectively because I think students are much more challenged, and the receiving colleges are much more supportive when they've got some commitment in the game. You know, when they're committed to their own students and committed to their success. So we think this is just and all other colleges and universities of our type work the way we're proposing to work here. This is not an unusual thing. In fact, we are an outlier in terms of how we do it. And I'd say let's be an outlier if we're having just phenomenal success. But we're not having phenomenal success. We're having pretty high rates of disappointment. So it seems to me we have to step back and see if we can learn from other colleges and universities that seem to be getting better results and try a model that we think is already much more successful, at least in part, in selected areas of the University of Minnesota. So I think there's no simple answer, but we're gonna be steadfast in our commitments related to recruitment. We're going to deepen and strengthen our academic support systems across the board. We're going to put more financial support on the table through private as well as internal reallocation of resources, and I think many, many other things that we need to do. But I also think we've got an obligation to reach out, join hands with the pre-K-12 system. I mean, I want students to aspire to go to the University of Minnesota. I want students to work hard to prepare to go to the University of Minnesota. I mean, if they don't prepare well, you know, they're not going to do well. It's just that simple. And so we can provide so much support, but we also need to make sure that the underpinnings, the foundations, the preparation for success in post-secondary education gets some priority as well.
Mr. Chair and President Dewey, right. So on the admissions front, part of your evaluation and expectations will be partly based on what those colleges do with admissions. Is that
mm-hmm.
is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. And we got close to a year to work this out.
One final question here, Mr. Chair. Currently the GC has a little over 800 seats per, it's 2 years, right?
And so no, there's freshman and the
freshman. Okay, so 800 seats in the freshman, or a little bit over 800 seats. I'm trying to figure out, and I know I heard you say we're not backing off our commitment to our current level of undergrad enrollment.
Okay.
So that's good to hear, and I know a lot of members here have asked that question throughout the region selection process and in other opportunities. And again, you know, I'm pressing, you know me, I'll press, but at the end of the day, whenever that is, 5 years, 10 years, few years from now, are we looking at anything short of 800 seats for new entrance to the University of Minnesota that come from the current profile that we're trying to target here, which is highly motivated, perhaps not ultimately or optimally prepared, low income, obviously, students of color. At the end of the day, are we talking about having 400 seats relative to these 800 seats representative from these communities? Are we trying to hold parity? What would be your goal and your expectations in regards to that?
Dr. Jones?
Chair Norris, Representative Mariani. We really don't have any fixed goal in terms of the number of seats going out, for underprepared students. Simply what we said is that the university, in keeping with its land grant mission, will remain open to underprepared students from a broad spectrum of social economic background. But as I indicated to you yesterday, one of the things that we fundamentally have had to acknowledge is that in the current structure, there have been too many students that have been admitted to the university that have little chance of getting a degree from the university. And what we are saying is that we need to step back, take a look at that, and we're working very closely with the officials in Ministry to say to those students that meet that particular profile that you will still have access to higher ed, you will still have access to the University of Minnesota, but you would need to enter that access through one of the junior colleges or technical colleges first, and through the articulation agreement, then transfer to the University of Minnesota. And so what that will do is create capacity so that we can increase our recruitment of students that are underprepared as well as highly prepared students, that students that have a good probability of being successful at the University of Minnesota. So that's the way that we are framing this whole picture. Is clearly we will, and we're absolutely committed to remain open and accessible to underprepared students. But it's a disservice to the students, their parents, and to the state to admit students to the University of Minnesota that have little chance of earning a degree.
And Mr. Chair, finally, I don't want to suggest that we should shift to some kind of a quota system. I mean, the courts have been real clear about what they would, and there are groups out there that would have something to say about that. In fact, we were here a few years ago, and to your credit and the university's credit and to the state of Minnesota's credit, they walked away because they really couldn't find a way to make an argument that we were doing anything that would violate any of the court decisions in regards to racial or other quotas. I think part of that was because of the university's very progressive stance in terms of being intentional about having an open gate for all students, regardless of race or income, but that weren't optimally prepared, for one of the regular colleges, and I would hate to lose that. So I'm not suggesting a quota system again. I'm just trying to wrap my mind around, a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, if I'm here, how am I sitting here and evaluating, what this has meant in terms of having a university that continues to be open, smart about being successful with students, but open as much as possible, short of setting up quotas, which, I don't believe in either. So,
sure. President Bernice, we do have a number of
questions
waiting.
30 seconds.
Yes.
Chair Norris, Representative Mariani, what I think is important when you talk about access, diversity, opportunity to attend the University of Minnesota, that we say very clearly that we have no intention of reducing the number of students attending the University of Minnesota. The second thing we plan to do is continue to improve student progress and graduation rates. That actually will increase the number of students who can access the benefits of the University of Minnesota. And thirdly, we have every intention of deepening our commitment to make sure the doors of opportunity at the University of Minnesota are open to people from low-income backgrounds and diverse cultural backgrounds. So, beyond that, I think it's up to us to make sure that it's access to success, that students really succeed, as Vice President Jones mentioned, when they come to the University of Minnesota. Now, people can say, well, we don't trust you to deliver on that. Okay? And we think the current model is much better, and we don't really trust you to deliver on that. Well, the good thing about the University of Minnesota is every year, the senior officers of the University of Minnesota take a very thick book to the university's Board of Regents, and in that book is every statistical trend that matters with respect to the University of Minnesota. You'll be able to follow this progress each and every year over the next several years, and looking at probably two or three dozen measures that you think are really important. So we are open, we're accountable, but we need to be accountable for real results for the citizens of the state, the students who entrust their lives and their investment in us, as well as their families. And we think this is the right thing to do. We think it's a better way to serve students. That's what it's all about. What's the best way to serve students? And I think we'll be far more successful in the future, and we will be a very, very diverse community as we are now.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, by way of background, I represent a district that is growing by leaps and bounds in terms of diversity and number of low-income students. I'm an inner suburban district, and some of the schools in my district begin now to rival some of the school sites that we've talked about in Minneapolis and St. Paul. I think overall of Robbinsdale schools is now somewhere in excess of 20% minority. But the east half of the district, much more diverse than the west half. By way, again, of background, I taught at a high school that was considered by many to probably be the most diverse high school in the state, Edison High School. When I left, when I retired, we were something like 66% minority, 66% free and reduced lunch. So obviously this whole question of access and diversity and opportunity strikes home for me, having spent a career working with students that I wanted to advocate for, both as a legislator and as a teacher. So I'm a little bit concerned about the road that we're down, and many of the questions that I had were asked by Representative Mariani, but I do want to focus on a couple. You responded to Representative Mariani that there are 800 students currently being served in the General College.
Admitted as freshmen.
And Dr. Jones, when asked the question about maintaining a comparable number, wasn't as direct, quite frankly, as I hoped he would have been. So I want you to focus a bit more on that. And I don't think I'm talking about quotas. I don't think Representative Mariani was talking about quotas, but we're, I think, both perhaps talking about making sure we maintain not only that current commitment, but perhaps expand upon it. So if you can give us some assurances relative to that, so that we are feeling that there's at least as many students being served and maybe more. Secondly, I'd like to have you clarify a little bit more on the admission requirements. CLA, for example, when you say they would be admitted to CLA, what are the differences then between being admitted to what we call the General College today and being admitted to CLA, and would we be looking at many of the same students under either scenario? Again, that opportunity access question. And then another point that I'd like you to touch on, kind of get at least at this point several of my questions out there. President Brunix, you said that we have double the minority population relative to, double the diversity, I think is the way you said it, as compared to Minnesota's population. But in years past, we've had some discussions about where those students are coming from, and I've got no problem with the university bringing students in from other states and in other countries. I think that's been one of the strengths. But there have been questions in the past raised in terms of what the commitment is to providing opportunity for Minnesota students, you know, working with our population here. And some would say that sometimes those numbers are masked a little bit because of the recruiting from other population centers and our large number of foreign students. So how are you defining some of that so we're sure that we're reaching out and meeting the needs of our own population, as well as being that great university that we all point to with pride relative to being able to compete and draw students both nationally and internationally?
Representative Carlson, I'll try to remember. I should have written the three or four points down, but let me try. First of all, I think members of the committee ought to know that about 18% of Minnesota's high school graduates end up going to school in some other state. It's higher than the national average. And I don't think that's necessarily bad. Susan and I have three sons. They attended schools in other states for various reasons. I think that export rate is a little higher than I think is desirable, and the University of Minnesota and some other institutions in our state have that magnet power of keeping more students here than I think is true of many other institutions. I'll give you a simple statistic that is very revealing to me, and that is when we admit a student and that student decides to go someplace else, 70% of them go out of Minnesota. So making the university more accessible by increasing graduation rates and student progress and increasing our recruitment in Minnesota, providing more financial support for students, I think actually will increase the very aspiration that you hold for the University of Minnesota and that I and my colleagues hold for us long term. We're not going to lessen our commitment to recruiting students in Minnesota. We're not going to lower our enrollment rates. But I do think we do need to be a national and international university. That's one of the things that we bring in terms of a unique quality and contribution to Minnesota's system of higher education. So I think we need to keep our eye on that international and national focus as well. But the University of Minnesota is not going to look like Michigan, an institution surrounded by a lot of big population centers. We are going to draw predominantly from Minnesota and reciprocity states, but I do think we need to increase our level of commitment to recruiting students outside of Minnesota. I think it serves us very well given the unique mix of programs. And when students come here from different parts of the country or different parts of the world, 70% of them stay in Minnesota and contribute to our economy and quality of life. So I think it's a very big part of our responsibility and vitality.
I appreciate your focusing on that, but I was acknowledging that as a good goal. What I want to hear more about, because we're talking about the general college.
Right.
So I want to hear more about what we're going to do to assure that we are maintaining that, at least maintaining the commitment we currently have. And the only reason I raised the question of recruiting from out of state and international students was I want to make sure that's not masking what we should be doing relative to recruiting the population group that I was talking about at Edison High School, to make sure that they're represented and have an opportunity to attend the university, or my district, which is the Robbinsdale Schools, to make sure that they also have that opportunity. And I'm a little bit concerned when we say we have double what the numbers are relative to Minnesota's population.
High school graduates.
That can be masked a little bit because we are the great university that we are. I want to look behind that number a little bit and make sure that we're also reaching out to Minnesota kids. So if you could focus on that, then you don't need to sell me on most of what you're talking about there for an entire legislative career.
Well, President Brooks. Chair Narnas, Representative Carlson, we are going to make a commitment to maintaining the diversity of the University of Minnesota. We are only changing the way in which we organize our academic units and provide academic support. If you look at the current numbers of General College, you would say over the years, General College has admitted approximately 30 to 45% of its students from diverse cultural backgrounds, students of color. That's roughly 350 to 400 students. 20% of the students in General College are student athletes, and many of whom are students of color. I have a hard time believing we won't admit approximately 160 to 80 students who are student athletes, have special talents, to attend the University of Minnesota. So when you take the gap between those student athletes and let's say it's 150 of them are students of color, and let's say at most 400 students, we're talking about maintaining a commitment to 250 students. Well, we don't even think that's good enough. We think we need to make a deeper commitment. So I don't have any. You may see next year some of these numbers slightly decrease. The following year they may go up. They go up and down every year because the admission is done on an individual basis to be consistent with operative state and federal law, and we're going to continue to do that. But the university's admission criteria, and I helped to write them, obviously puts emphasis on preparation to succeed, and that's true. So the admissions requirements now for the College of Liberal Arts are higher than the admissions requirements for entry into General College. And as a part of the planning that will occur, we're going to address all these issues in the next year. But I do expect the admissions and preparation requirements for entry into the Twin Cities campus to improve somewhat over the next few years, because I think we have an undeniable obligation to the citizens of the state to admit students to success. It's not just enough to open the door. It's to make sure when you enter the door that you can succeed. And that's a widely shared responsibility throughout the university community. But I don't have any doubt about the university's steadfast commitment to recruiting people from all walks of life, from very diverse cultural backgrounds, including the young people at Edison High School. And if you look at the kinds of ideas that we're going to put on the table, I think they're going to produce those results. But they have to produce results to success. They have to produce pathways to success. And we need to change the argument here. We need to get better preparation of our young people in our schools. I mean, it's not going to be a solution to Minnesota's future to keep eroding the admissions requirements of the University of Minnesota or any place else. That's not going to serve Minnesota and our position in a global economy that requires brain power and highly skilled people to succeed. That's the only competitive advantage we have in the world economy, is the academic preparation of our students, the kinds of skills they bring to the workforce as adults, working adults. So I have the same sense of urgency, the same sense of concern that you have, Representative Carlson, but all I can say is that the university, as a public research and land-grant university, cares deeply about these issues and will manage it so. I mean, it's all about managing to the plan. We'll manage the kinds of priorities and the actions that are necessary to produce the results. And the trouble with arguing this issue in the public marketplace is I've got to convince everybody of absolute certainty and success as a condition for change and reform. But the critics don't have to make the same arguments for the lack of success. And I just want you to think about that for just a moment. Do you want a future at the University of Minnesota where access to the University of Minnesota in all of its diverse forms in terms of the backgrounds of our students goes primarily through one port of entry? I want you to go home and think about that. I find it to be a very uneasy proposition, and it's one that I will not accept and I will not support as president of the University of Minnesota. I think we can do better, and that's what this is all about. It's not about backing off our commitments. It's about deepening our commitments, putting systems in place that will really produce results, and doing a much better job of recruiting diverse populations to the University of Minnesota, ensuring they're successful, ensuring the students we have are properly supported, and making sure they can compete in Minnesota and in Minnesota's and the world's economy of the future. So I know these are difficult issues. You know, there's this great line from a book, Tales of a Traveler, Washington Irving, where he says there's a certain relief and change, as I have found in traveling by stagecoach. It's often a comfort to shift one's position and be bruised in a new place. I know that's all about change. We're all, you know, you do get bruised. I mean, you talk about getting bruised and battered. I now have the rare distinction when I go into a building and having pickets outside with my names on the placards. You know. So I understand all of that. But I think we are at a time, this is a watershed. If we're going to address these issues, we've got to deal with them straight up, honestly, systematically. We've got to reach down into our K-12 system, make sure kids take the right courses, have high aspirations to attend the University of Minnesota. We are not going to raise the aspiration and preparation levels of our young people in our society if we keep on this path, which is to keep arguing to lower and lower the sort of standards for admission, increase the probability of being unsuccessful at the University of Minnesota. I just think that's the wrong recipe for the university, for the state of Minnesota, for increasing the diversity and access to higher education. I think those are all the sort of the wrong propositions. That does not mean what we've done is wrong. It does not mean what we've done is ineffective. It just means that we can make it better, and that's what this plan is all about.
Mr. Chairman, I might just comment, Dr. Brunix, I haven't heard anyone on this side of the table talk about lowering standards.
No. I didn't mean to imply that.
Someone who would be a casual listener to assume that somehow that's what we're talking about. That's certainly not what I was talking about, but I think we can also talk without going down that road about making sure that opportunity is there. And what's after from the university is to have some assurance that that commitment continues.
Representative Carlson.
If I might, you used the statistic, you said something like 7.5% of the students who enter the general college at the end of 4 years are on track in terms of a four-year year degree. But I'm also aware that a number of those students take remedial courses, and it's my understanding that a lot of those courses don't necessarily grant credits toward a degree because they are, by their very nature, preparation courses and remedial. So isn't it a bit unfair then to put a measurement then up there that they're not completing their work at the end of 4 years? Mm-hmm. When they're actually taking courses in terms of preparing for that higher level course.
Dr. Jones?
Yes, Chair Nardis, Representative Carlson. The stat that you quoted, if I heard you correctly, is not exactly accurate as it relates to what actually happens in General College. General College does not offer a large number of remedial courses. In fact, the best of my recollection, I think that there are like two mathematics courses, and the number of mathematics courses has decreased over time dramatically in the last few years because of the high expectations that the university set years ago in terms of the kind of courses that students would have to have in order to be successful at the university. So the best of my recollection, there are only like two mathematics courses and perhaps one or two other courses that are remedial in nature. The rest of the curriculum that students take that enter through that portal or CLA, undergraduate liberal education approved credit bearing courses. They're just taught from a different mode with a different teaching approach. But the students don't come and take just remedial courses. In fact, they may take, some of them take no remedial courses at all. But some of them, most the majority of them take the liberal education approved curriculum that's been prescribed and developed by the GC faculty. So the most of the courses they take are credit bearing. They count toward movement toward amassing the 42, 43 credits that's necessary to transfer to a undergraduate degree in college.
And Mr. Chairman, I understand that in part, but I have heard that math, and you did happen to reference that as one of the problematic areas when students are coming in, and I'm assuming then maybe that a lot of those students may be taking math, but not. But anyway, I don't want to necessarily dwell on that.
That's true.
In terms of the number of remedial courses, that's fine.
That Chair Narnas, Representative Carlson, that's true of students. Students in other parts of the university will access some of these same courses to get kind of better grounded in an area where they think they need more strength. But the curriculum at General College is not a remedial curriculum. It is predominantly, like probably 98-99% of it would be in the generally approved liberal education curriculum of the university.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that.
Yeah.
I was left with the impression, though, yeah, that especially in math / science, you know, we talked about jointly,
yeah,
that's where we hear a lot from the university about remedial needs.
Yeah.
And I assume that the General College is meeting some of that need, and
right,
maybe I was assuming a bit more than the university generally, but we've also even heard about IT as...
Yeah.
Relative to remedial as well.
But it's a very small number at the Twin Cities campus, very small percentage in General College or in the rest of the student body. And your recollection is right. It's mostly focused in getting a somewhat stronger grounding in mathematics. That's the primary area.
Representative Pulaski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since this is a fiscal committee, I want to return to a fiscal theme just for a second. I'd like to know how much of what's going on with the strategic initiatives are the result of the base cuts of 2003 and the underfunding of the university? And when that question's answered, I have a follow-up.
President Brunick?
Chair Narnas, Representative Pulaski. I think there's little question that institutions like the University of Minnesota constantly undergo these changes in part because of financial pressures, and some of those are from the budget cuts and some of those are from rising costs, but there's little question that the underfunding of the university does have these kinds of impacts. We'd probably be less likely to consolidate colleges if we weren't cutting the faculty complements in those colleges and finding it necessary to create a somewhat larger economy of scale. So that's right. But I would say that these changes, that would be an important part, important reason, but not necessarily the primary one. We also think that these changes will greatly increase the academic strength in core fields of the University of Minnesota. I think where the budget cuts really hit and hit very, very hard is they reduce many times your level of service. They cause you to increase prices on students. If you think about it, Chair Metzen tells me he ran on a low tuition platform when he was appointed to the Board of Regents, and in his tenure, tuition has gone up 81% in 7 years, I believe. But he's still committed to that campaign promise. But in the last 2 years, it was 29%, you know, roughly, on all the campuses of the University of Minnesota. So that is the real impact, is the rising cost of higher education for students. A student today, a low-income student, has to work 60 hours a week to pay tuition and fees now at the University of Minnesota. It used to be about 22 hours in the early 1980s. The second loss, and I think the more substantial one when you have these severe cuts, is you can't make the kind of investments you need to keep kind of ahead in this globally competitive world. But I think it's the answer is a little bit more complicated. You have to raise prices higher than I think is desirable. That's a tax on our students and a tax on their families. You lose opportunity to really invest in critically important areas in a highly competitive world, and you do, thirdly, have to make these kinds of changes that you pointed out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pulaski.
My follow-up question is this. You said that this would be a 12 to 24 month process, so we'll be into the next fiscal cycle by the time you're done. At some point, will we see a number as to the amount of money that's been shifted within the university? And I'm not asking that because I want to take it away, but I think it would underscore your comments that mm-hmm. with base cuts and underfunding, would we be able to see a quantitative number at some point of the resources that have been shifted here and applied to the needs that have been expressed by both Representative Carlson and Representative Mariani in a quantitative way, so that we know that these resources have been used within other areas of the university to address the concerns that have been brought up today?
Chair Norris, Representative Pulaski, absolutely. We will follow this money very, very carefully. All savings that come out of these academic restructurings are going to be invested in an academic account and reinvested in the academic life of the university. For example, apropos of the questions that have to do with enrollment, student support, access, and opportunity, we're going to make some very serious investments in scholarship programs, in student recruitment, all university academic support systems. We're going to make sure that any kind of cost savings that come from converting, let's say, General College into an academic department, and there are considerable cost savings. They're not enormous related to the university's budget, but they're considerable. I think close to $800,000 is real money. We're going to put these back into the student life and student support systems of the University of Minnesota. But I would point out that there's no big money to be saved here, that the full funding of the university's budget request assumed that we would make even greater internal reallocations than the ones I see coming out of these efforts over the next few years. Our estimate is that these changes that I've talked about this morning will shift about $5 to $7 million of academic money through the University of Minnesota, and maybe $15 to $20 million of administrative savings. For example, some of the ideas in the administrative task force talk about how we can lower the cost of our more than $100 million utility budget. And if we save some money there, that money is going to be reinvested back in meeting the rising costs of the University of Minnesota and also some of our academic investments.
Mr. Chair,
President,
you've made my point. I'm not asking about savings here. I'm asking about addressing a need. And I think to underscore the budget requests of the university and the fact that there have not been needs addressed, you now need to show us. And for those of us that have been here a while, with the university's had commitment to focus and all sorts of other programs that sort of linger around for a two-year cycle, and then we never hear of them again. I don't think it's going to happen with this particular initiative. It can't, because it's the core center of the university. It's the research element of the university, and it's actually making the university do what nobody else does in the state of Minnesota. So it's to your advantage to be able to come back and show us, not what you save, but how you address needs within the university at a critical time, and how you use that money, and then, and I would hope it's enough. I have a suspicion it isn't going to be enough, not nearly enough, and we're still going to see double-digit increases in tuition. We're still going to see probably cuts in areas that none of us would like to see the university cut. But that has to be demonstrated now, and it's going to have to be demonstrated for a considerable period of time in order for the state to come back and say, we will reinvest in the university at the needs that you've demonstrated that we have to. We just have to. That's not a question.
Representative Berdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Brunix, thank you for coming here today and presenting your report on the vision of the University of Minnesota. I think efficiencies and reorganization are needed, and you are to be commended for that. But of course, whenever one brings up reorganization, perhaps some people feel threatened or there are concerns. And I'd like to bring to you some concerns that have been expressed to me about this. And one, I'll read from your statement of recommendation. We recommend for consideration that a task force be charged with developing and implementing a reconfiguration of the sciences and engineering that best integrates and promotes academic synergies, teaching and research among four current colleges, Biological Science Institute of Technology, Agriculture, Food and Environmental Sciences, and Natural Resources. The concern being expressed to me is that somehow this is foreboding a closing eventually of the College of Agriculture. And wanted you to respond to that.
Chair Narnas, Representative Berdahl, I'm really pleased you asked that question. That will not happen. And this recommendation I think, addresses a really important and growing concern about how the different academic fields of the university need to work together. It's estimated that about one-third of the faculty employed at the University of Minnesota, particularly in the Twin Cities campus, are classified as biologists. My colleague to the right, for example, is a biologist. And this is all about trying to find ways to strengthen the connection between and among colleges. But one of my chief priorities as president is to really advance investments in what we call healthy foods, healthy lives. That is everything related to the production and processing of food, the connection of foods to human health. I think this is going to be one of the great areas of advantage and strategic advantage for the University of Minnesota. 10% of Minnesota's GDP is in this area. And so we think these are going to be breakthrough fields. And so we're not proposing anything that will weaken these fields and weaken their visible identity and commitment to the state of Minnesota. But we do think that more of the exciting ideas are in the intersections of colleges and academic programs now, and we need to find easier ways for people to work together between the College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Sciences, for example, and public health and the medical school. And so that in the middle of this recommendation is to actually take the Joint Department of Food Science and Nutrition, for example, and center it in the current College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Sciences, and then deepen the connections to public health and medical school. We think that's going to actually strengthen the College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Science, strengthen this critically important department, and also strengthen the relationships that we think are critical in the future. So that's basically what it's all about. That particular recommendation is going to take some time to unravel, and in my recommendations to the board, I've actually changed it some to focus more on the area of food systems, environment, renewable resources as stage one, and then there'll be a separate conversation about these issues that will take into account all of these colleges.
Senator Brudel.
Okay, thank you, Chair Norris. President Brunix answers one of my questions. I appreciate that. And on a, I guess, kind of a related note, College of Agriculture reaching out. We did have a hearing earlier on the extension service and evaluation of the changes that have occurred there. Still am getting questions about that at Lamberton. You did make a commitment to 4-H and to extension. I'd like to hear today what your vision is for the future of 4-H.
President Brunix.
Chair Norris, Representative Verdol, I've got a deep and abiding commitment to the 4-H program. I think it's been a very important part of the state of Minnesota. I wish some of these kids weren't very good at, weren't outstanding equestrians, because they regularly ride against me and beat me at various horse shows that I participate in. But it's a fine program, and I think one of the things we learned in this process is that the Minnesota rural communities care deeply about the future of their young people. They care passionately about the strength of the 4-H youth program, and to my knowledge, the counties have come together with the extension and really deepened their commitment in this area, and we plan to stay with it.
Okay. One more.
Representative Verdol.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hear that President Brunix, and one more quick, a comment, and then you can respond. And then, actually, I've got another committee going on at the same time I have to leave for. But there is a, and then this is the same thing that I expressed to Dean Casey when he was here, and that is that there still is, whether it's true or not, sometimes perception makes things true in some people's minds, and that is that there are concerns that extension service is still top-down in terms of mandating what's happening, but also, maybe more importantly, and that is that the University of Minnesota is seeking out those people who are not approving of what's happening, who are critical of what's happening, and terminating their positions, or if they do speak out, finding that they lose their jobs.
Chair Narnas, Representative Rudolph, I don't know a thing about that. I can tell you that it is perfectly permissible at the University of Minnesota to speak out on anything. And you can beat up on the president every day of the week, and he takes it with good humor, most of the time. So I don't know where this is coming from, but in our HR, our human resources systems, people have unbelievable protections. If that's an issue, all people have to do is draw it to the attention of the appropriate office at the University of Minnesota. But I don't believe that's the spirit that Dean Casey uses to approach his job. He's one of the most inclusive, thoughtful, and sensitive people that I've met in all my history of work in higher education. And I know he believes very, very much in maintaining a respectful culture. And so my sense is that culture is alive and well, that is a respectful culture for employees is alive and well in extension, and I have every confidence it will continue. But it's normal when you have to go through changes and some cutbacks for people to look for different reasons, but it's not because people speak out that I think changes are made. I am deeply worried about some of these issues, as you know. There was a possible change suggested in the U.S. DA Farm Bill, and that was taken off the table, but no one has reduced the budget cut to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the next place they might go is the formula funds that go to the heart of extension, our experiment stations, and other parts of this incredibly important network to the University of Minnesota. So I think we're not out of the woods yet on some of these issues, and we're going to have to work together to try to address them as we go forward.
Final comment?
It is the final comment.
You can make two if you want.
No, I'm just done.
We do have to leave you by 11 o'clock.
Just real quick, Mr. Chairman, and that is, I did not mean to imply that Dean Casey doing that, but just to bring to your attention that some people do have that perception, and again, I express that to Dean Casey as well, and I know that he's aware of that.
We have two more questioners. Representative Cox?
No, I'm fine with that,
okay.
Chairman.
All right, Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President, I've just got a concern about the funding for the University of Minnesota. Could you tell me the impact that has had on the medical school?
President Runitz?
Chair Narnas, Representative Dempsey. I think it has had a very negative impact on the medical school and other parts of the university. For example, not just the last budget cut that we've been talking about, but if you'll recall, about 4 years ago, the state legislature and the governor signed a bill to provide the university some funds through the tobacco litigation, the tobacco settlement, and that was shifted in the last session, I believe, to the tobacco tax. That amount of revenue to the medical school has declined by $3 million recently because of the decline in the tax funds or the yield from that particular tax. So we've had the 15%, nearly $200 million reduction over 2 years to the university's budget, decline in the receipts from the tobacco tax, and that together they combined to have a pretty substantial impact on the medical school and all other parts of the university. Now, the university has really worked very hard to maintain its investment and commitment in the medical school, but I must tell you that this is a worrisome trend and one that we really need to reverse. Two-thirds of the advanced medical practitioners in Minnesota, your doctors, your pharmacists, your veterinary medicine specialists, others, come through the University of Minnesota, and we not only have to invest to ensure that our healthcare system stays viable and strong, but we also have to invest in the research and other responsibilities of the Academic Health Center. Some private citizens have come together to really work on addressing these issues to get more state support as well as private support for the medical school, and I must tell you, this is one of our most worrisome and also, I think, our highest priorities as we go forward.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, President Brunix. The management changes that you're going to make in the university, I don't know how extensive that is going to be, but I would hope that maybe you would keep us a little bit informed as to how that's working. I think that's vitally important. And I know it's very difficult in management, and a lot of people don't understand management because they weren't managers. They're not accountable, and you take a lot of heat in regard to that, and I know that's not easy. And I want to let you know that my comments today are one of saying you're doing a heck of a good job, I think. And one of the things that you're going to be doing I would hope anyhow, saving some dollars through your management redesign. And I'm just wondering if that will be sufficient to offset some of the lack of funding that you think that you would need it that you may not get. Could you comment on that, please?
President Brunix.
Yes, Chair Nernis, Representative Dempsey, it will not offset any funding decreases from the legislature. I'll give you, put this in some perspective. Even given full funding from the legislature, our administrative units at the University of Minnesota will have to cannibalize their budgets to meet compensation costs, that is, salaries, wages, and health benefits. And that's in the tens of millions of dollars. So every dime of savings is going to go into increased costs of the University of Minnesota, even under the best of scenarios, and some modest amount of investment. We're going to make some investment in areas like the Academic Health Center, the Medical School, in the Biosciences, hopefully with a lot of help from the biennial requests of the University of Minnesota. But most of the savings from administration will go into meeting rising costs. And there'll be some investments, for example, that will help us expand the implementation of the financial system so we can better support our grants management process at the University of Minnesota. There'll be things like that that will reform our management systems, but there won't be a big, big fat dividend that we can move over into, let's say, shoring up the medical school. But we do think we can over a 3 to 5 year period, find economies in the neighborhood of something like $15 to $20 million. We think we can save $5 to $7 million by just being smarter about how we manage our $100 million-plus utility costs. And the state legislature, this committee, and the governor have been our ally. For example, you approved the biomass facility for the University of Minnesota Morris. The Xcel settlement has put a wind turbine on that campus that supplies 60% of the electricity to the campus, and the excess is sold to the Otter Trail power grid. And so we're working on a lot of reforms like this. We have a permit to request in to burn old halls, for example, on the Twin Cities campus. You all need to keep eating Cheerios to keep us warm next winter if this goes through. But it will save landfill costs and maybe $1.5 million to $2 million. And so we're trying to reform every possible practice. We're going into electronic purchasing strategies, auction strategies in a very big way to cut down some of our procurement costs. And I could go on and on. The administrative report is a real report with substantive reforms that will affect every service operation of the university, every business operation, every administrative operation over the next 5 to 7 years. So we're really excited about that part of our work.
And just one last comment. I hope that I know the your reductions and so on. I hope that the faculty is understanding of that and that they're supportive of. I'm sure there's going to be some criticism in regard to what you do, but keep the faculty up to date as to what's going on. They're absolutely key people in higher learning and in research. So I wish you well in your job. I know it's going to be a tough one, but you'll do okay.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Dempsey. I will say, you saw up here two of our faculty leaders. There are several others in the audience today.
Chair Metzen of our Board of Regents said when he heard the vote, 98% in favor of the strategic plan, he said he didn't even think the faculty would vote 98% to raise their salaries 20%. And what I take great strength from is the extraordinary creativity and strength and productivity of the faculty of the University of Minnesota. It doesn't work without them, and it's one of the reasons you will notice in our biennial request we really asked for some modest investment to really address what we think are some national and internationally challenging issues on faculty compensation, and I hope that survives in the conference and becomes a part of our bill. So we do have some challenges in this area, but we're blessed with, I think, extraordinary people who are deeply dedicated to the future of the University of Minnesota. And I want to thank you for that comment. It's a very special comment to the people who are here today.
Members, we're nearly out of time. I want to make sure we do the minutes. I want to do that before we have our final question or two. What's that? Okay. I need a motion to approve the minutes on April 19th.
I would move those, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cox moves the minutes for Tuesday, April 19th. Any questions? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. One other thing, I was the one that handed out this NDSU tuition piece. Came out of the Fargo form. I thought it was just interesting reading for you today. Almost out of time. Representative Mariani, can you ask one quick question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. And for the record, President Brunings, I think the University of Minnesota is worth more than the investment that we currently have on the table here, certainly more than what we've done in the last few years. Just very quickly, I know the regents will be, I believe, scheduled to review the strategic plan this month, and I think it's the expectation that they'll be voting on it one way or the other in the following month.
Yes.
And I know you had an internal process going on for several months, but that's 2 months, give or take, since the public release of the new plan. Just very quickly, tell us why you think it's critical for the regents to act on this now, as opposed to maybe later on in the year. And the reason I ask that, and I know that any new initiative and change is not going to get 100% support from everyone out there, but I think that there are some potential allies with you that are still not comfortable, and for some of them, if I can give voice for some of them quickly, they're feeling a little bit rushed on this. So maybe just kind of quickly about your sense of the window here, the short window where you think action needs to be taken.
Yep. President Brunings.
Chair Nornes, Representative Mariana, I understand that there's always connected with these changes a deep sense of loss and a feeling that we need to take more time. The strategic plan was discussed for approximately 8 months very, very extensively. It lays out the framework for these recommendations that are going forward to the board. We've continued to have very extensive discussions in the intervening period. The board will hear my recommendations in May, as you indicated. They will take public testimony and then act on the recommendations in June. I believe this has been a long-standing process. Some of these discussions and some of these issues have been under discussion not just once, but for years. So I think the time is now. This is the right time to make these changes. They're the right changes to make for the university's future. I don't see any advantage in delay. And the one point I would make that is so important to appreciate about what we're trying to do is we are laying out a set of changes that we think are important to adopt, but we're putting forward a long-term, highly inclusive process for getting the changes right. And that's another place for people to participate and participate very actively in shaping the ideas and shaping the recommendations and shaping their implementation. I think E.F. Schumacher put it beautifully when he once wrote, the policy is in the implementation. So there's lots of
future engagement that people can have in these issues. But I see absolutely no advantage in delaying this vote. I think in this case, if we delay the vote, delay the action, until everybody is comfortable with the results, we will get no action at all. I've watched it enough over the years to come to that conclusion. We'll keep working on it, but I think once the action is taken, we'll take time to get it right, and we'll be very inclusive in our process, and it'll involve people inside as well as outside the university. But I think the time is really, it's very, very urgent for the university to demonstrate to itself and to the outside world that we can take on challenging issues, we can be decisive about our future, we can set our course in a thoughtful and considerate way, and then we can act on our core convictions. And so I am not going to withdraw these recommendations. I'm going to put them on the table in May. I'm going to ask and urge the board to vote on them in June, and I fully expect to get support of the board, and when that happens, we'll roll up our sleeves and really make these changes and reforms work for our students and work for the citizens of the state.
Representative Cox?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Attorney Arnes, I just wanted to announce that Regent Stephen Hunter has joined us here today, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we want to thank you for the 2 hours that we've spent talking about your plan, your initiatives here at the university. Thank you very much. And
well, thank you.
There will be a date in the future where we'll specifically zero in on the General College and have another opportunity to talk about that.
Good.
So thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Meeting is adjourned.